If lines at the polling places are any indication, voter interest in this presidential race will surpass any in recent memory. How have the campaign and our political obsessions been playing out in the rest of the world? Zan Smiley is the Washington bureau chief for the British paper The Sunday Telegraph. We called him at his office earlier today to talk about his impressions.
Well, for an outsider, a Brit, it's tremendously enjoyable. I mean, we're a bit nonplussed by the whole thing, mainly, I suppose, because of time and money. As most of your listeners know, our campaigns last 3 weeks, and each candidate can only spend about, I think it's $15,000, on top of which the leaders of the parties are very, very much less personalized. I mean, there's no direct election for the prime minister's job. It's a purely party thing. So the whole swing of the American campaign is very, very different and, I think, to many Europeans, somewhat outlandish.
Are you sick of it yet, though, because it's gone on for so long?
No, I think, like everybody, I'll be pleased when it's over. As a Sunday reporter, I haven't been sort of with the boys on the bus relentlessly, but I sit in Washington, and every week or so I've made a sally up to New Hampshire or Iowa or Arkansas or wherever. I'm a great believer in going to the roots of the candidates. That's going back to the primary campaign, and I've enjoyed going to, you know, small places in Nebraska or Iowa, or I've been to Hot Springs and Hope, the two homes of Bill Clinton and so forth. I found that very intriguing and fascinating.
How have you written about the three leading candidates, and in a kind of nutshell, how have you tried to explain them to your British readers?
I suppose they're most baffled by Ross Perot, but then maybe a lot of Americans are baffled by him as well. I put it like this. I think compared with a lot of American journalists, we don't pretend to be particularly objective. I'm much more subjective. I let all my prejudices and emotions hang out, and I really sort of say what I feel about them. So I'll say quite bluntly on your air, I'm somewhat allergic to Ross Perot. Well, I think he's done a good service by bringing up some of the brutal economic conundrums of the country. But I think he was a ludicrous figure to have as president. And then when you go to the other two, well, they're both very interesting characters, and both of them, I think, rather difficult to pin down. They both have many sides to them, and one's like any correspondent. You're never quite sure whether you're catching the real guy when you put him down on the page.
What do you make of the language of the campaign? And even within the last couple of months, certainly Ross Perot has had some very colorful phrases about having his head under the hood, fixing the engine. President Bush has talked about bozos and Mr. Ozone and crazy man. Does that surprise you, the level of talk?
No, it doesn't. And we like that colorful thing. I think American politics, until you got to the sort of final round of the election campaign when everybody lets rip, actually American politics on the whole is rather decorous and dignified, and I mean, the odd person here who can switch on to C-SPAN and see questions in Parliament, in the British Parliament, knows that our sort of tradition of heckling and cut and thrust is much more low life and brutal.
Do you think the press in this country is too concerned with candidates' personal lives and dig too deeply into those lives?
No, I mean, I don't, personally, I don't, I think, you know, there's a balance, and there are some aspects of people's characters where there has been needless intrusion, but I don't take the rather high-minded view that we don't have a right to know. I think if you're really going to put people into this horrible sort of meat grinder for a year, it's absolutely inevitable. And America does have this sort of somewhat mythologizing idea of what a president should be, some sort of perfect kind of human specimen. I think the irony to me is that when it comes to it, except in foreign policy, a president doesn't, in fact, have all that much power because of all the American constitutional checks and balances. I mean, a lame duck prime minister, as John Major is now, if he wants to put some social item through the legislature, he can do it in a matter of a few days. Done. I mean, there's no question of pork barreling or anything. Whereas, you know, if it's Bill Clinton or George Bush, even with a non-divided executive and legislature, it isn't all that easy to push things through. And I think the ultimate irony is that the president, or the would-be president, is built up as this sort of great, all-powerful, mythic figure in the popular mind. But in fact, he is hamstrung all along the line.
What were the memorable moments for you?
Gosh.
And they could be either high points or low points.
Yes. Well, I think starting off, I mean, this sounds rather soft, but I think the very beginning of the primary business is fascinating to an outsider. And I remember I went up to see, I followed Bob Kerry around New Hampshire for a short while. And I was sort of very touched. I thought it was fascinating to see how he began, as presumably all the others did, going to very, very small houses in the middle of nowhere with the local sort of neighborhood called in, sort of dozen people, probably almost the same number of journalists. And there he was sitting in a sort of little wooden chair with a very much a sort of cross-section of rural people asking him about healthcare, which of course is his obsession, and him sort of spelling it out at that level, and then thinking that, look, you know, maybe if he gets that message across, and he didn't quite, in sort of 4 or 5 months later, he'd be, you know, addressing a convention of 10,000 people. I think it is it's a noble idea, starting at the very, very bottom and moving all the way up, and I think that's a fine thing. I suppose the more obvious points of drama are when, for example, I was on a can't even remember exactly where it was. It was, again, somewhere in New Hampshire, and it was in an airport hangar, and there was a bit of a rustle of expectation that some unpleasant letter had appeared, and a slightly shaken-looking Bill Clinton walked up to a rather small group of us, about 20 of us, and sort of said very peremptorily, you know, he'd got a real letter. And then he read out in full, I think it was. I'm not sure he read out the whole letter, but he discussed and broached the whole issue of the famous letter from Colonel Holmes. And there was a sort of sense of, is he done for, isn't he? It was a moment of drama, and I must admit most of the journalists thought that was it. But the one thing I have learned here is sort of never take the pundits too seriously, and I'm sure a lot of pundits know that too, but my God, pundits are wrong all along the line, and I think I've been pretty much wrong very often as well. So.
Well, we're just about out of time here. What will you be doing tonight? Which channel will you be watching?
Actually, I'll be going to a party, I think I better not say whose it is, but it's a party where, in my view, the people are likely to be somewhat euphoric, but I'm not going to say that I'm not necessarily totally going to share in their euphoria.
Well, thank you, Zan Smiley, for joining us on Fresh Air today.
Thank you very much.
Zan Smiley is the Washington bureau chief for the Sunday Telegraph and soon-to-be political editor for The Economist magazine.